Good afternoon, everyone. The Health and Human Services Finance Division will come to order. Thank you, everyone, for getting here on time in what is not our usual room, so we really appreciate that. I know it took you a few extra minutes to get here. We do have a quorum, and we have two sets of minutes. One is from March 26th, and one is from March 27th. Is there a motion to approve the minutes of March 26th?
So moved.
Representative Loeffler moves approval of the minutes of March 26th. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. The minutes are approved. The minutes of March 27th, is there a motion to approve those?
I move to move those minutes.
Thank you. Representative Kunesh-Podein moves approval of the minutes of March 27th. Is there any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. And those minutes of March 27th are also approved. Thank you very much. So today we are here primarily to hear House File 5. There is a fiscal note in your packets. It's a kind of a larger fiscal note than we are used to seeing, but it's got a lot of important information in it. And we are... This is a bill that has been through many committees. It is here for a particular purpose, and that is the fiscal note that pertains to our committee. So we're going to work very hard to keep the discussion to that issue. That said, we always allow authors or somebody on behalf of authors to give us an overview of what the bill is. And so we will begin with just a bit of an overview of the bill for those who might not be familiar with it or for those who might be watching. And so I would like to welcome Representative Halverson, and please go ahead and present House File 5.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To begin with, I'd like to move House File 5 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
So Representative Halverson moves that House File 5 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Thank you, Representative Halverson. The bill is before us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll keep my remarks brief. I do have a couple of testifiers. But the basic overview of this bill, which, as you mentioned, has seen several committees. We are up to seven today. And I actually was just counting in my head to make sure I was correct. So most, I think, of you have heard this at least once already. This is our proposal for paid family and medical leave in the state of Minnesota. There are two countries in the world that do not have some type of law governing paid family and medical leave. The United States is one. Papua New Guinea is the other. So we are late to the table when it comes to providing these kinds of benefits. Our employers are not completely late to the table. Minnesota's employers have been leaders with paid family and medical leave, but the fact is there's still only 14% of employees who are currently covered by any type of program for paid family and medical leave. And we all know that life happens. Joyous things happen. You get to have a baby and spend time bonding with your new baby, which takes you away from work. And difficult things happen. A family member gets ill. You may get injured. In fact, most paid family and medical leave that is taken in other states is actually taken for someone's own injury or own illness. And so the need is great. Currently, Minnesotans leave about $383 million of wages on the table by not being able to take paid family leave. And that has a big impact on our economy. Obviously, if you don't have money in your pocket, it's not going out into the economy. But when you look closer at the healthcare economy, it means that more people are needing to access public benefits that are provided through the state of Minnesota. And more people are choosing to stay out of the workforce at a time when employers are really looking for workers. And so this is why we've seen so many committees, is because it has a huge impact across the board in the state of Minnesota on our economy, on the health of our citizens, and on the ability of employers to attract and retain workers. So we want Minnesota to be one of the most competitive states for workers, and paid family leave does that. The program is based on the UI system, which has been very very successfully run in the state of Minnesota for decades. And it creates a pool, like an insurance pool, that employees and employers pay into equally. We're looking at a very minimal premium. The estimate, according to the fiscal note, is 0.6%. So it's a very reasonable premium that small employers can help small employers get into the marketplace. And it provides for up to 12 weeks of medical leave or up to 12 weeks of family leave to care for another person. There are rare circumstances where somebody would be eligible for both types of benefits throughout the year, but they are exceptionally rare. In addition, I think it's important to note that in the experience of other states is that leave does not typically extend for the max. And I kind of see Minnesotans work hard, and so we leave a lot of other things on the table every year with regard to sick time and with regard to vacation time. The process is that the applicant who has a qualifying medical condition would apply to the Commissioner of Deed, give notice to their employers that they're applying for these benefits, and benefits are approved based on certain, based on the issue and based on your healthcare provider's information that is provided in terms of recommending the that type of leave. And so, and then it's a partial wage replacement. I think that's also important to note. And so, and it's a progressive scale. If you are a low wage worker, it's based off of the average weekly wage in the state of Minnesota. So if you are a low wage worker, you can recoup up to 90% of your income. If you're a high wage worker on the other end of the scale, you can recoup up to about 56% of your income while you are on leave. It's an incredible improvement over what we have now in the state of Minnesota for most employees. However, there are companies, local units of government, and others that currently have one or both types of leave available through private plans, and those private plans are eligible for a waiver if they want to continue to provide those private plans as long as we've got comparable benefits set. So that is a brief overview of the bill. The impact of the bill, I think, is much more important, and I have two testifiers who would speak to that, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Representative Halverson. We have Jan Malcolm, Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Health. Commissioner Malcolm, welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. Nice to see you again. And I'm really, really happy to be able to speak to the health effects of the paid family leave proposal that Representative Halverson has just gone over. We've had many a conversation in Health and Human Services Policy and Finance over these last weeks about the fact that health is about more than health care, and that if we're going to bend the curve on cost in any sustainable way, and most importantly, get more health for the people of Minnesota with our investments, we need to take a more comprehensive, holistic look at the things that actually influence health outcomes and people's health choices. And I'm pleased to be able to share with you our public health perspective that as important as this issue is from an economic perspective, Representative Halverson talked about the very real impacts on the economy and on the workforce. I just want to reinforce that this is a public health issue as well. With paid leave policies, people are healthier, period, the end. People are able to use less sick time, less reliance on health care services, and many, many positive health benefits for mothers, families, and children. You might be surprised by the robustness of the list of health indicators that are positively affected by paid leave. It's truly, from the perspective of what we know in the United States, but also as we look at international health system comparisons, as Representative Halverson mentioned, we are one of the only states. We're the only state in the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development that does not offer paid family leave. And we know a lot about the differences in population health status across those OECD countries. And we know in particular the lower rates of infant mortality that are associated with paid leave policies. And researchers have actually posited that one of the reasons, I'm not saying it's a cure-all by any means, but one of the explanatory variables for why the United States ranks last among OECD countries in infant mortality is this lack of paid leave. You might recall, I shared a story that was powerful for me in committee some weeks ago, having heard a former Surgeon General explain so cogently that one of the biggest explanations for poor birth outcomes in the United States was not just about access to prenatal care. As important as that is, it is absolutely vital. But what the Surgeon General said was the biggest predictor is maternal income security. And I hope you might remember me sharing that with you before, because it goes right to the heart of approaches like this that are not just about healthcare access, but are about those upstream investments in the conditions in our society that allow for healthier outcomes. Paid leave is associated with improved rates and duration of breastfeeding. And the data on that are absolutely abundant on the impact of breastfeeding on improved nutrition for infants and protections from infections, direct health care prevention investments, better physical and mental health for both mothers and children, sharp decreases, and I mean by cutting in half the rates of readmission to hospitals following births for both infants and mothers in the presence of paid family leave. I mentioned lower rates of infant mortality, strengthened family bonds, which Representative Halverson mentioned. That has such an impact on decreased chronic stress. And the more we understand about the impact of stress on healthcare conditions and healthcare costs, it is an enormous multiplier of the impact of health conditions and the degree to which stress creates the health conditions to begin with and exacerbates the chronic conditions that grow over time. Higher rates of well-child checkups, timely doctor visits when kids are sick, higher vaccination rates, all of these things are positively correlated with paid family leave policies. We've talked a lot about the impacts, the very immediate impacts, which actually show up quite quickly in healthcare costs avoided for mothers and infants, but family medical leave throughout the lifespan is a further impact on people's health and on cost avoidance. When you talk about the burden on family caregivers for dealing with illness, serious illness that happens in families, or with the long progression of aging and related declines in health that occur there. So paid family leave is directly substituting for a lot of both more expensive and less satisfying reliance on institutional interventions to deal with ill family members and aging family members. And finally, I'll just end by saying this is also one of the most powerful things I believe we can do to respond to the disparities in maternal and child outcomes that we've also talked about in this committee, because we know that the degree to which folks in our system and in our society who have differential access to these paid leave policies, it is the very lower wage workers in jobs that lack paid leave benefits that are experiencing some of the highest disparities. So this is literally just a compounding effect. And it's similarly a compounding effect on the positive side if we start to invest in policy solutions such as this, which pay off not only in better health outcomes and avoided healthcare costs, but in greater economic opportunity for families as well. Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate being able to share that perspective with you.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. We have Tony Menkskin from Isaiah. And please be very brief. Yes. Thank you.
Hi, Madam Chairman. Thank you so much, members of the committee, for the time to come and share my family's story.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
My name is Toni K. Mansko, and I came here today from Rochester to tell you about my family and my experience as a family caregiver. As a caregiver, I've done a multitude of day-to-day tasks like helping around the house, arranging for meals on wheels, and driving to and arranging transportation to appointments, typical caregiving activities. It may be surprising to some that I have also provided much more complex care, including medication management, injections, wound care, and managing chemotherapy treatments. I've provided this type of care for my two disabled adult children, my mom, my dad, and my developmentally disabled brother. I've done all of this while working full-time in the medical field. Caregiving is a challenge, but my family needed me. My son was diagnosed with inflammatory bowel disease at the age of 16. At one time, he took 22 pills a day, required methotrexate injections, and needed cortisone enemas. He had an ostomy and needed assistance changing the ostomy bag and providing wound care. He is now 33 and still struggling with this dreaded disease. As his mom, I wouldn't be anywhere else but by his side when he needs help. My daughter, who is here at the beginning of the month to share her story with your committee, has struggled with chemical dependency and mental health problems, including post-traumatic stress disorder. My dad was diagnosed with end-stage lung and heart disease. He became oxygen dependent and had an aortic valve replacement, along with four stents placed. I was with him when he was moved into hospice care. My mom is currently undergoing chemotherapy treatments for lymphoma, a type of blood cancer. And when my parents' health started to decline, I became guardian for my developmentally disabled brother. He has behavior issues, diabetes, and a newly diagnosed blood disorder impacting his kidneys. My family members have had multiple visits to the emergency room, hospitalizations, and placements in skilled nursing facilities. For me, caregiving is a full-time job. When the phone rings, I never know if it's going to be a crisis call or what may have happened. I dread hearing the phone ring, but once again, my family needs me. Working with cancer patients and their families, I hear from other caregivers with similar experiences. My employer does offer paid time off for their employees, which I am grateful for. However, the paid time off I'm offered is not nearly as generous as the proposed program currently before the Minnesota legislators. There are so many times I've taken unpaid leave to be with my family members and tend to their care needs. This is a financial strain for me and my family. But I'd do anything for my loved ones. The value of a family's emotional support and presence during a loved one's illness cannot be measured, and it should not be degraded or punished by the fear of financial difficulty. As caregiving becomes the new normal, most of us will likely be caregivers during our lifetimes. There are so many of us with aging parents or disabled family members, and we may find ourselves serving in the role of caregiver. No one should ever have to live without making a choice between not paying their bills and sacrificing their loved one's well-being. Please continue to make it a priority to pass a strong, paid family and medical leave program before the legislative session ends. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Mankskow. We really appreciate it. Dr. Michael Severson. Welcome to the committee. Please just say your name for the record and then go ahead with your testimony. And we'd ask you also to please be brief.
Okay, thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Dr. Mike Severson. I'm a general pediatrician. I've been in practice for 35 years in greater Minnesota, primarily in Brainerd, but also in Fergus Falls and in Winona. And I'm currently the chair to the advisory board of the Children's Defense Fund in Minnesota, and I'm a past president of the American Academy of Pediatrics in Minnesota. I'm here in strong support of paid family and medical leave because of the health and economic benefits that are clear and will provide to Minnesota families, employers, and communities. The responsibility of caregiving will inevitably touch most of us at some point in our lives. House File 5 would allow maintenance of some income while providing caregiving that ranges from new babies to a sick spouse or an aging or dying parent. As a pediatrician, I have seen firsthand the impact of paid family leave for parents after the birth or adoption of a child. The bonding, if we provide for it, is truly real and heartwarming. Research shows that when a mother has access to paid leave, it improves her postpartum health and reduces the chances of maternal depression. Also, when fathers access paid leave, it improves their involvement with the child's long-term developmental and social outcomes. Most parents work. One in four women return to work only 2 weeks after giving birth. 70% of men who took paid leave took 10 or fewer days. The bill we are considering would change this and dynamically impact families and consequently the health of our state. Child care is expensive, especially for infants. With paid family leave, parents are more likely to take advantage of their stay-at-home option and then return to their jobs. to the jobs they had and were trained for. When comparing all choices, paid family and medical leave is by far the most cost-effective for family, employer, and the state of Minnesota. At the end of life spectrum, in relation to long-term care, Health File 5 represents a cost savings by delaying expensive nursing home care costs that are often paid for at the taxpayer's expense. According to AARP research, there are approximately 600,000 family caregivers in Minnesota providing care for family members 18 years or older. We've just heard that in the previous testimony, that there's so many hidden care providers that sacrifice so much for their families. The economic value of this care is estimated to be $7.8 billion annually, saving taxpayers hundreds of millions every year, often at great personal sacrifice in lost wages and income. We can no longer wait. With paid family and medical leave, Minnesota can implement a fair and just system that ensures our state's families have equitable access to the care they deserve and healthier outcomes. I strongly believe Minnesotans, when they learn more and more about this program, will endorse it for us, and I'm certain your policymakers are familiar with all that. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anyone else here who would like to testify on House File 5? And I don't see anyone. So, Representative Halverson, we're primarily here to discuss the fiscal note that impacts our committee, and I wonder if you are able to do that, or is there someone else? Maybe we could ask staff to do that. I don't know, Mr. Berg's been a little busy lately, but maybe he can do a lot of things at the same time. I've found that out even more than I understood before. So, Mr. Berg, maybe you could walk us through a little bit and explain the piece that pertains to our budget.
Madam Chair, members, I am somewhat familiar with just the DHS section. If you go to page 17 of the fiscal note is where the DHS costs come in. And it's relatively straightforward. These are systems costs for system programming in the MAXA system, the MEC2 system, and the MEF system. These are large computer systems that monitor eligibility for various public programs. And because a lot of the programs involve work and income requirements, the programs have to take into account this benefit as work or income as appropriate. And so it has effects in the general assistance program, the supplemental aid program, child care, housing support, MFIP, medical assistance, and Minnesota Care for both eligibility and, eligibility. And these are the programming costs relative.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Berg. And Representative Halverson, was there anything you wanted to add to that, or shall we open it up to questions at this point?
Madam Chair, I could not have done that better, so thank you,
okay.
Mr. Berg.
All right. Excellent. So are there member questions? Representative Bierman and then Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So do I have to stick to the fiscal note part of this? Yes? That's all we're going to talk about?
Representative Bierman, that's the purpose of that the bill is here for, so I would prefer to, I mean, I think we've had a little testimony kind of about the larger fiscal impact on health,
which
is important, but we are here for the fiscal note.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Halverson, for bringing this forward. And my question is, once we have the initial startup costs with this, as I understand it, ongoing years will be funded by the payments made by businesses going forward. So we won't have large ongoing costs beyond this kind of setup period and once it's running. And is that sort of how it was based on models in other countries? That's how they fund it themselves?
Representative Halverson.
Madam Chair and Representative Bierman, just a little background on how we got here. With regard to this particular model. In 2015, the state legislature authorized a study, required a study be done, not on whether or not the state should do paid family leave, but how we would do paid family leave. So the question of if it's needed was sort of answered in that legislation. And so the University of Minnesota did some modeling on successful programs around the country and in the United States as well. I think there's seven states that have adopted paid family and medical leave programs. And from that came up with this model. It's based on actually Minnesota's experience with unemployment insurance. So it is modeled on our unemployment insurance system because it is a large system that hits across the employment spectrum and is funded through premiums in the same way. So you are right. The ongoing costs will be paid by premiums. And those premiums are shared equally between employer and employer. The employer gets to make the decision about how much cost sharing they're going to provide above 50%, but they will provide a minimum of 50%. And so you look at a premium of 0.3% of an employee's salary from the employee's point of view and from the employer's point of view, and that provides enough income to keep the system rolling. In addition, if you are a self-employed individual, you hang out your own shingle, you're not left out in the cold. You can actually be part of the program as well by paying into the premiums. And we have structured this bill in a way that a self-employed person would not have to pay a double premium as an employer and employee. They would only pay the employee portion.
Thank you. One more question.
Representative Bierman.
So in other states that it has been enacted in, as far as you know, there haven't been massive small business failures because of this policy.
Madam Chair and Representative Bierman, no. In fact, what the science shows is that it increases employee retention. It increases workforce participation, particularly among women. Some of the best data that came out of California, which has had a paid family leave program in place for about 10 years. And California saw an increase in participation in the workforce by women by 10 to 17% across the state. And so at a time when we're really seeing workforce shortages, healthcare in particular, that's a 10% increase of the workforce participation is pretty amazing.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative.
Madam Chair, can I just say one last thing?
Yeah, Representative Bierman, we're kind of off the topic a little bit.
Okay.
But please finish up.
That's
okay.
We can I'll just say this, that as a small business owner with 10 to 16 employees, I've run the numbers as far as what I see this would cost and have weighed the benefits. This is a great program. I'm excited to have it part of state law, and I think it will do nothing but benefit my business and my retention of employees. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And as always, I'm just awestruck about the cost of programming any of our old ancient systems. And we're asked to step up. And I want this bill to pass, and I want the program to get in. But to think that 7.5 highly skilled IT people, equivalent of year-round work, are needed to add one new type of income to the numbers that you add up to see if someone's eligible is just astounding to me. And I know that's a little tweak, because if you're not able to work because you're sick or you're caring for a sick person, that of course should exempt you from the work requirements under some of our programs. But it says in the bill that this is to be considered earned income. And is there any way that we could just say you add this in as earned income as if it was a paycheck? Because if someone applies and they've had two or three different employers, maybe they had several part-time jobs, they have to list every single employer and how much they made from each of those. And this seems to me like just another line they would add in, and then we maybe wouldn't need to do quite so much programming and could maybe even get it up faster. Has anyone explored whether we could just call this another source of earned income to be added in?
Representative Halverson.
Madam Chair and Representative Loeffler, if there's anybody from any agency who would like to speak to that, I certainly would welcome it. But I will tell you that the hours that have gone into putting the finances together have been very long and have been thoroughly modeled. I come to the table, of course, with the same questions. I think we should really scrutinize the way that these fiscal notes get put together. But having been at the table in a very real way at every stop of this particular bill, spending a lot of time with the agencies, everybody feels like the modeling is very solid on this.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. We're all just still learning on how this all works, and the 20% per year maintenance seems a bit high too, but I bet that's a standard factor that's added on.
Yeah, and Representative Loeffler, I have to say I had some of the same question. And I think that what it highlights for us is how we have these ancient systems that, and you know, we're going to, you know, in the governor's budget, there is a request for some money to start kind of thinking forward about what our next system upgrade is going to be. And I was very glad to see that forward, idea that we have to start thinking and talking about this and planning for it way in advance so that we can actually build, when we build new systems, we build ones that work from day one and do the job and don't, you know, cost a ton, and we know what we're getting and all of that stuff. And this just kind of illustrates for us again how critical that work is, because we're all struggling with this. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I hope that as we fund and design new systems, one of our key attributes is flexibility, so that we can respond to changing policy and add new factors without it having to be a start from the ground again.
Yeah, thank you. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, in regards to the fiscal note, you know there's the chamber and a lot of businesses seem to have a lot of concern about this bill. Have you met with stakeholders on that side and tried to address some of their concerns? It seems overly bureaucratic, you know, with almost 400 FTEs and setting up 3-judge panel to handle complaints versus a tax credit or incentivizing employers to provide something.
So in answering that question, Representative Halverson, we want to stick to this part that's in front of this committee and not talk about other aspects of the fiscal note. So if you could just, I don't know, do you,
if I can very briefly say to Representative Green, I actually almost chuckled because thanks for the softball. I have met, I meet constantly with stakeholders about this and have made numerous changes to the bill based on stakeholder input. It's outside the purview of this committee, but my conversations are ongoing, and I have in community meetings and at the legislature meetings a lot about this particular legislation, and have gotten as many concerns as are out there, I would say I've gotten much more positive feedback from business owners.
Yeah. Thank you, Representative Halverson. Knowing you and knowing the way you work, I am not a bit surprised at that. Representative Grunhagen.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, and I think the feds are looking at doing something as far as paid leave also. I don't know how this would coordinate with that, but I do think there's benefits to it. I just don't know if this is the best approach. It seems a little expensive and bureaucratic. But anyway, that's my initial read. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you. Representative Munson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It is an enormous fiscal note, and I guess we're supposed to just focus on the HHS. But I have not heard this bill in any committees. I'm maybe the only one in the committee that hasn't. I'm concerned as it relates to the HHS about self-employed people who primarily buy their insurance through MNsure, and so many of these programs are sliced by your income. And I mean, as a self-employed person, my contract just ended on Friday because my employer doesn't make reasonable accommodation for this job. But I think a lot of people who are self-employed can't just take 6 weeks off, not because of the pay, but because their business stops. And so it's frustrating to me that this wouldn't be something that would be that I could take advantage of, because I can't stop serving my clients because they'll just terminate my contract. And it's strange that you're only taxing people 0.3% who are self-employed like me. I pay myself as an employee, so I'm wondering if I would also have to pay both sides of that. I do with all the other taxes and withholdings I do in myself as an employee. But if my income drops, because I go, if I were to go on this paid leave, and I think I get 55% or 56% of my income, does it then change my eligibility for programs for health insurance? Do I go from private insurance now to I have to go on Minnesota Care because my income drops so significantly for a period of time, and how does that impact all the benefits in the systems that way?
Representative Halverson.
Madam Chair and Representative Munson, I think that that's a really good question. First of all, the reason that I worked to get the 0.3% for self-employed people in the bill is for exactly the reason that you said. You know, for all the other taxes like Social Security tax and those types of things, you're paying double. And that's one of the biggest concerns I hear about small business owners. And so I didn't want that to be a hurdle from them participating in paid family leave. So it was part of the calculation of how can we be as fair as possible and make sure that people who are self-employed can get in. And the woman that I keep thinking about when I think about making sure that everybody could participate is a woman who's a small business owner. She is, you know, has a single chair as a hairdresser, and she said, if I could get wage replacement, I could have a baby. It's like she's at this stage in her life when she's making those decisions. People are literally making decisions about whether or not to have a family or the size of their family because they can't imagine, like, you know, it's like most people can't go a couple weeks without a paycheck. And so this changes the economic calculations for a lot of families. With regard to public programs, I don't know about your specific situation, but I will say in other states what has happened when these plans go into place is that there is less reliance on public programs. One state reported a 15% decrease in utilization of public programs because people weren't having to leave the workforce and rely on other types of public programs to cover their health care. But it does count as income, as you said, but it is a reduced income. So where that puts you in terms of mathematics, I think, is personal, and that's probably why we're sitting here with this fiscal note.
Okay. Representative Munson?
Yeah, and I just wanted to respond to Representative Halverson's comment about being unfair to self-employed people because they pay both sides of that. I think that's really impactful because we're actually aware of it because we're the employer and the employee. But every employee in Minnesota has both sides of this money taken out of their paycheck. Whether they see it or it's being hidden from them, it impacts their wages. And it's really telling that was a conversation because I honestly think that self-employed people should pay both sides of it just like everybody else because we're still employees. And but the fact is that the self-employed people won't be taking these benefits because our businesses really won't let us take that massive leave. And I am concerned about how this changes with the public programs and somebody on Minnesota Care who might get 90% of their income, then drops below the level that they qualify for medical assistance, and getting services shut off because of it. This bill would have a lot of work to do, and I'm going to be voting against it. Sorry, Glenn.
And Madam Chair,
Representative Halverson,
just to follow up on that, the experiential history of this type of leave actually reduces the reliance on state programs. So I think that that's really important from a budgetary standpoint.
All right. Thank you. Representative Haley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Chair Halverson, I don't know if this question is for you or for Mr. Berg. I'm just trying to clarify the impact to the base ongoing. Representative Bierman's point that there wouldn't be any ongoing costs. And I'm looking at page 30 of the fiscal note to clarify the assumptions here as to how many state government employees would be utilizing this benefit. And that is then an ongoing cost to us. And I'm seeing 2021, 5 million, and thereafter it looks like 10.5 million each year. So I'd like Mr. Berg to just clarify, am I interpreting that right? And then also the ongoing cost for the 400 FTEs to administer the program.
Mr. Berg?
Madam Chair, Representative Haley, you're into the management and budget section of the fiscal note, which I have not read in detail. I would hesitate to comment on this until I've read a lot of it because there's quite a bit of narrative, and this gets into the state employee group insurance plan, which is paid for by, well, I would hesitate to comment further. I haven't read the MMB section.
And
thank you, Mr. Berg.
I don't know if Representative Halverson want to comment, but I'm looking at that page 30, and it does say that The state started offering family leave in fiscal year 2017, so we are already doing it. In fact, I kind of remember when we started to do that. So, Representative Halverson, any other comment on that?
Well, the first thing I would say was great pun to Mr. Berg. Anytime you have a choice between having me answer or Mr. Berg, always pick him. So, the other thing is we did have a four-hour hearing in State Gov Finance on Friday regarding this, and MMB testified quite heavily. So the assumption is that, I mean, this is, I can give you the layperson's vantage point. The assumption is the state will participate as an employer, that we will, as a state, be providing this benefit to employees, but it will not be, building from zero, as you said, because we provide a portion of this benefit already to our negotiated labor contracts, and that is the family medical leave portion of the benefit. So we currently do offer it as a state. We offer about half of it.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Halverson. Representative Neuer. Representative Haley, you had a follow-up?
Just thank you. I guess I would request if we could get that information back, because as we ultimately, we are going to have to make decisions on balancing the priorities for the state. And this is probably, next to education, the most complicated budget area. And the area that we spend the most. So I would like to be clear how much then gets added to our base ongoing as we, again, ultimately have to make decisions on how to most appropriately serve Minnesotans and spend our limited
Representative
resources.
Haley, you're talking about to the base in HHS.
Yes.
Okay. I don't know if Mr. Berg wants to comment on that.
Madam Chair, Representative Haley, I think the MMB costs are separate to the whole, I mean, that's in the issue of the whole state workforce. I think what you're talking about is the issue of program cost. And there is in the DHS section, if you look on page 20 on the long-term fiscal considerations, you'll see there's some discussion of the fact that this note only has programming and system, ongoing system operational costs, and it notes that it does not include any impact on program utilization for public economic support and medical programs, but notes that they may go up or down, and that they don't know the answer to that at this point.
Okay. Thank you. I won't belabor it. Thank you, Mr. Berg, but I guess I am also asking just state costs in general to our budget. And in addition to state employees, it's folks that are paid through other public programs, nurses, et cetera. So I can maybe take it offline and try to get that answer.
Yeah, Representative Haley, because you're talking about pieces of this that are outside this budget that we're talking about today. Thank you. Representative Neuer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Halverson, for bringing this bill forward. Clearly, the paid family leave will touch every worker and their families. And I know we're not even talking about the programs. We used to have AHIC program, which is for those who cannot afford to pay. It's
Representative Neuer, I know it's so awkward in here, but could you please get closer to the mic?
Sure, thank
it's
you so,
so hard.
Much.
Sorry, you face have need to face this way and that way and this way.
We'll do my best.
Okay, thank you.
We used to have a program that we funded. It's called AHIC, which is at-home infant care for families who don't have enough care, which was actually a family medical leave, and we discontinued paying for that. It's actually a federal program through the child care system, which allows families to spend up to 12 months to care for their newborn. And I think that's something that we need to be moving forward by bringing a program like this so that individuals can pay into and provide them the care that they need. So the question about the programs that we're going to be having in terms of the cost, this will impact many programs, and you will see a lot of expense from DHS because it's not only MFIP, it's going to touch the child care program, the MA program, and many, many other programs, and they have to do regression testing. We know that we have got systemic issues, and I think this is they undercut themselves knowing that they'll have to do a lot of uplifting, but I think this speaks for itself. So thank you so much for bringing this bill forward.
Thank you, Representative Neuer. Representative Mann.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to briefly mention that I find it interesting that in 1987, when Minnesota passed the Parental Leave Act of Minnesota, during those discussions, the main focus was job protection and employee cost. maternal child bonding was only briefly mentioned, and maternal health was not mentioned at all during any of those hearings. So I am thrilled that the discussion today opened up the way it did when we're talking about people's health and people's well-being and people's outcome. And I don't know if we can ever put in a fiscal note, and we could look at other states, but the amount of money that the state will save with less people on MFIP and CCAP and more employee retention and less health care costs, ear infections, pneumonia in infants, and less health care costs for moms, specifically mental health care, with depression being the number one cause of disability worldwide, this decreases the amount of depression. So, again, I don't know how we can quantify that to say, yeah, it looks expensive, but look at all the savings that we are going to see.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Dr. Mann. That was very, yes, I also find this really, when I think about our future as a state, our workforce shortages, the struggles of our families all across the board, even solidly middle-class families, you know, this is something we need to do for our future, for our kids. And so I really appreciate this bill, Representative Halverson, and the tremendous work and energy that it's taken to get it this far. And I would love to have you have the last word, and then we will vote on the bill.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Normally I'd say it's a great bill. Please vote yes. But because this is the Health and Human Services Committee, and anybody who has spent 5 minutes with me knows how passionate I am about what is driving the increase in healthcare utilization and healthcare costs. And this is how come I became so passionate about this bill, because of the long-term health impacts that we are going to be able to see as a state and be able to realize as a state. For folks who think we can't afford to do this bill, I really, based on the testimony particularly of Commissioner Malcolm and hearing from Dr. Mann and our physician testifier and our family testifier, what have we been asked to do all year long in this committee? Find ways to pay for care for Minnesotans. This is a very vital and effective way for us to pay for care and relieve some of that pressure on families and on our state. And so I am incredibly excited about this bill and look forward to it continuing to move forward and continuing this discussion, Madam Chair. I'd appreciate your support.
All right. Thank you very much, Representative Halverson. So with that, Representative Halverson renews her motion that House Bill 5 be recommended for re-referral to Ways and Means. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no?
No.
The motion prevails, and you are on your way to Ways and Means. Thank you very much. Are we the shortest debate on that bill so far?
Yep, thank
you. Yay. All right. So, members, we have two other bills on the calendar. They're, please, folks, we're still hearing bills, and we still have business, so please be leave quietly if you're leaving. So we have two bills on the calendar on our agenda, 2604 and 2605. They're both my bills. I'm going to stay here to do them because they're, frankly, these are vehicle bills. They are not here for the substance. They're just here to be moved along to Ways and Means, and in case we need them later on in session. So that's kind of all the discussion I think we'll need, unless anyone has questions about that process. It's one that's used by every committee, every fiscal committee, and often even by policy committees. So so I would move House File 2604 to be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion to that motion? All right, seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The motion prevails. 2604 is moved to Ways and Means, or recommended to move to Ways and Means. And I would move that House File 2605 be recommended for re-referral to Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion prevails. 2605 is recommended for referral to Ways and Means. So, with that, I just wanted to give folks a little bit of a roadmap now. Things have changed just a little bit. We will meet tomorrow at 12:45. Our bill should be released. We're expecting to release it sometime tomorrow morning. And then our committee will meet at 12:45 in the regular place. We may go as late as 5 o'clock. And then we may reconvene, right? Okay. Okay, yeah, but we may reconvene Tuesday afternoon, right? Okay, and so tomorrow the agenda will be that we will have a walkthrough of the bill by staff, and then we will begin testimony on the bill, public testimony, although we will hear from the agencies first and also any public testimony if people are ready to go on that. And then Wednesday, we will continue on public testimony during our regular time, and I think longer than that as well, right? Yeah. So on both of those days, we could be going 12:45 to 5. Members will recall that Wednesday evening, we have the State of the State. We hope to be done with our public testimony. It's somewhat possible we may come back after the State of the State. I really hope not to do that. So we're just going to try to, you know, move through the testimony from the public. But I think it's very important that we allow people to testify on the bill, and then important for members to hear that testimony because you may want to respond to it by drafting an amendment, as a matter of fact. And then our intention was that Thursday we would not meet as a committee. Unfortunately, the schedule changed a bit. We had planned to use all day Friday for markup. I had been told that we were not going to be on the floor on Friday. It turns out that we will be on the floor on Friday. So what we're going to do is begin markup on Friday morning. We haven't completely landed on the time, but early. It's going to be either 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock. And then we will go until we'll stop in time to leave members time to get some lunch before we go on the floor. So that's our intention for Friday. If we don't get done with markup on Friday, we will have to come back on Saturday. So just members, plan for that, please. I'm sorry to do that. I don't like doing that myself, but we have to get our work done here. And members know that sometimes we work really hard in spite of what the public may think. We work very hard here. And so weekends are not off limits. I also want to let you know that the deadline for amendments will be noon on Thursday. Okay, so you'll get a chance to hear the public testimony and then have a little extra time to draft, get your amendments drafted. So if you hear something, you know, there's a glitch in the bill, we forgot something, whatever you want to do, you'll have a chance to do that. And certainly Representative Grunhagen, I mean, members always, you have an amendment to delete something, that's your amendment. But major amendments, we will ask them to be pre-filed. We'll require them to be pre-filed, so by noon on Thursday. As has been our custom in this committee, minor amendments, if you need to fix your amendment before you have it heard or, you know, something, or we're working on something, and, you know, I will use discretion to allow amendments that are oral amendments or ones that come in late if they're, you know, not major and we can deal with them. So I appreciate everybody's cooperation on that, but it will work so much better for our staff if we have that deadline. And I do want everybody to know, and I know we hear this all the time, people always make these statements on the floor about how hard our staff work and how much we appreciate them. I have been seeing that firsthand, and it is flat out amazing. Our staff are so hardworking, they're so incredible, they're so capable, and I want to try to make their lives as easy as we possibly can, although we can't do a lot of that, but we're going to do our best, and they also have lives and families. So we appreciate your cooperation. Are there any questions about any of that or concerns or anything I've said on that? All right. Representative Grunhagen?
What's our target?
What is our target? Well, Mr. Berg, do you want to?
Madam Chair, and I'm Representative Grunhagen, the exact number fails me right now. It was 100. It is the governor plus 21.7 21.7 million.
Yeah, it's
above
all
the governor.
Thank you.
General fund.
Yeah, it's all public. Representative Gruenhagen, there is a, you know, I'm sure it's easily available. I'm sure your researcher can give that to you as well. All right. With that, we thank you, members, for showing up on a day when we don't usually have committee. And with that, we are adjourned.